You're listening to Sandra Yancey, founder and CEO of eWomen Network, international award-winning entrepreneur, number one best-selling author, movie producer, and philanthropist.
Welcome to my six strategies mastered by the super successful. I have six things that I want to talk to you about, and I'm very specifically picking number one on purpose. You know why? Because it's often left for last, and so I want to make it first. The first one is self-care. Taking personal responsibility for self-care is paramount to building and maintaining a successful business. Self-care includes all the decisions that you and I make for ourselves to ensure that we are physically and mentally fit. Self-care includes exercising to maintain physical fitness and promoting good mental health, as well as eating smart and avoiding obvious health hazards such as smoking. There are three areas in which I have learned to pay attention to: body, mind, and soul. And so I'd love to share with you in each category, three different things that I've done and now you can do to actually pay attention and nurture your self-care. Number one, let's talk about your mind. I mean, the first thing you can do is start an accolades file. Keep your thank you notes and even your emails, print them and keep them in a separate place. If you have to, if you're having a down day, if you're just feeling like you're in the fog, if you're lacking motivation, this is a wonderful place to go to read the wonderful things that people are saying about you. And it can be a real motivator to get yourself back in the game. Another thing that you can do is fix a small annoyance at home that's been nagging you. It could be anything from just organizing one disorganized drawer, or fixing a door that's been squeaky, or even a button that's been missing from your favorite jacket or your favorite top that you haven't been wearing because you're afraid you're going to lose the button, or maybe it's fallen off and you've got it in the pocket. Fix it so that you can enjoy it again. Another thing that you can do is give up to free up. Recycle three things from your wardrobe that you don't love anymore and you're not regularly wearing. It lightens the load, amazingly enough, when you just get it out of your space and give it to someone who's really going to love it. Let's talk about three things very quickly that you can do for your body. Bust out some moves. Many people don't like going to the gym. I get it. But you can still move your body by putting on your favorite song and dance. And I mean, like, really dance. Dance as if, not like no one's watching, but like everyone's watching and you really want to impress them. Okay, the other thing that you can do is make a small change to your diet for the week. I mean, just say to yourself something little like, you know what? Every single day I'm gonna drink an extra glass of water. Or maybe I'm just gonna have an extra portion of veggies. Or I'm just gonna avoid fast food this week. Little things that you can do. And the third one that comes up that I love is just to inhale an upbeat smell. That's right, I love smelling citrus. So what is the scent that you really love? And give yourself permission to smell it. And I love peppermint, and I don't know if you know about this, but peppermint actually suppresses food cravings, and it can actually boost your mood and subsequently your motivation. So there you go. Three things you can do for your soul. Well, the first one that comes to mind is imagine you are your best friend. If you're a journaler like me, you might want to pick up your journal and imagine, you know, what your friend would be telling you about you right now. And just put your place in being your best friend and then just let it flow. If you don't like to journal, maybe you can just say it out loud or maybe even look in a mirror, but do it with conviction. Number two, help someone. I mean, never underestimate the power of a smile and how a smile can turn someone's day around. So you can do something as simple as a smile, or you can open a door, or maybe if you're at the grocery store, you can actually call your girlfriend and ask her if there's anything that you can pick up for her while you are there. Chances are she'll say no, but she's gonna feel so appreciative that you did it, and you're gonna feel so good that you did it too. And finally, choose who you wanna spend your time with today. I mean, hang out with radiators and gladiators. You know, people who just really emit enthusiasm and positivity versus Debbie Downers who are pessimistic and their negativity tends to rob your energy. The point I'm trying to make here is that it's the little things that you do consistently over time that is really key in the area of self-care. With a little bit of attention to your own self-care, the fog that you might be in will lift. You'll feel more connected to yourself and the world around you. You'll delight in small pleasures, and nothing will seem quite as difficult as it did before. Like your car, you must keep it tuned up to make sure that it's operating optimally. Number two, let's talk about networking. Yep, networking works. With all the access to social media and online resources, some people wonder if networking is now passé. Let me assure you, there is nothing more strategic and more impactful and more memorable than face-to-face networking to create lasting impressions in the minds of the people you meet. I'm here to tell you, if it's one thing I know, relationships equal power. It's always about who you know and who knows you. This can always lead to future opportunities for you and the other person in terms of advice and business. Being an entrepreneur can be isolating and it can be lonely. Listening to yourself and sometimes for some of us, the defeating messages that can sometimes creep in through our own stinking thinking, this can be really detrimental. And networking is a chance for you to learn something new and garner new ideas. Just getting away from your inbox can be motivating and instrumental in keeping you to push harder and push farther. After networking events, make sure that you stay connected with those that you have met by following up. Take a look at the business cards that you've collected and reconnect with those people that you really felt an affinity to. Those people that you could potentially do business with, people that can support you in your business, people that energetically you just say, I want them in my tribe. Follow up to move that relationship forward. And here is a simple five-step approach to consider that I use in my follow-up messaging. Number one, reference the event that you met them at and the conversation that you had. Mention something specifically that was discussed so that that person can truly recall you. Right? Number three, suggest a way to keep the conversation going so that you can then move it to number four, which is closing the message with a suggestion, a specific suggestion on next steps. And then, of course, you want to request a reply. And number five, I would suggest that if you're emailing, include a link or attach an article or blog that relates to something that you talked about to the other person. I don't like to follow up personally using email. I'm much more attracted to writing a handwritten note. I think it comes across much more personal. It is less likely to get buried. It's guaranteed to be opened and often even ends up lasting on someone's desk for a while when I send them a card versus an email that just gets often deleted. I will tell you that with a card, I often still will make a copy of an article or a blog or maybe grab a magazine and then mark the article that referenced something that we chatted about. I might buy a book that references something that they had as a business challenge, or I might even pass on a book in my own personal library. I mean, any of those things are wonderful ways in which to follow up with people, whether you prefer a more digital electronic format or kind of what I call old school but oh so effective format. So in addition to traditional methods of networking, let's look at using your digital platforms. I mean, social networking sites such as Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn, I think are ideal for contacting and becoming noticed by those that you otherwise wouldn't be able to speak with or connect with in person. I mean, LinkedIn has several groups that you can share your knowledge, your blogs, your articles, your white papers, that kind of thing, to showcase your knowledge and to allow you to strategically meet new people. right? According to the Taylor and Francis Group in London, you have as little as 50 milliseconds today to make your first impression and to impress those that are reviewing your page. So I would suggest to you that you would want to make sure that you have no inappropriate comments or photos on your wall or in your feed. Discretion and censorship, I believe, is of utmost importance when you want to align with prospects, business colleagues, or even corporate sponsors. They have core values, and if you're doing something that is inconsistent with their core values, a picture that is offensive, that could lose you the opportunity to connect with them. And if that matters to you, then I would suggest that you be careful what you put on your page. All savvy business people, I think, are including social media as a way of doing background checks on you. I know I am, okay? And I have not hired people based on how they have represented themselves in social media. And quite frankly, in some cases, I've even been shocked because when I meet them personally, they've come in for an interview, it's been really impressive, and a social media background can totally blow it. So just know that your net worth is only as good as your network. Make sure you're putting your best foot forward in coming across the way you would want a new potential partner, sponsor, or customer to see you. Number three, PLANS. PLANS is an acronym for me. It stands for Purposeful Living Absolutely Never Stops. Planning is one of the most important components to any successful business. And planning to me is preparing a sequence of action steps that you can repeat and duplicate to achieve a specific goal. If you do it effectively, you can reduce so much time, effort, and money. H. Stanley Judd had a quote out there. He said, a good plan is like a roadmap. It shows the final destination and usually the best way to get there. And that's what I love about plans. I mean, I like to think of a plan like you would think of using your car's GPS, or if you follow a map to get to a specific destination. Like a map, when you follow a plan, you can see how much you have to go or how much you've progressed towards your destination or a project goal. You can also see, you know, how much time, you know, you have yet to spend, because many GPSs, right, will tell you, you know, how much time has elapsed or how much time till you get to your destination. And a good plan does have time estimates. You'll know if you are or if you aren't on plan to arrive at your goal at the designated time that you wanted. And if not, you can identify shortcuts or detours that will help you before you really get into a crisis situation. I'm sure many of you have heard the 80-20 rule, right? I mean, it's been well established that for unstructured or unplanned activities, 80% of the effort gives less than 20% of the valuable outcome. So you either spend much time on deciding what to do next, or you're taking many unnecessary, unfocused, and inefficient steps. So it's really up to you. You know, you got to establish your goals. That's where you want to go. You have to get clear on your desired outcomes. You have to identify strategies, which is how you're going to get there. You need to have measures and targets so that you know that you are on plan. And then you look at your results and you ask yourself, how do we do? And perhaps more importantly, even, is how am I going to improve for the next time? You know, there's a saying out there, someone said, a good plan today is better than a perfect plan tomorrow. So get busy, right? Don't worry about perfection. It's a phantom word. It really doesn't exist. I just think this quote is so powerful as to what is really being said here, which is imperfect action is better than perfect inaction. You have to be able to anticipate as much as you can, but then get moving. Trust that you will make mid-course corrections. You will never be able to foresee all the roadblocks and all the obstacles. But I'm here to tell you, with a solid plan, you will most likely be able to make adjustments and modifications with better grace and ease, eliminating so much time and resources and unnecessary costs. So it's important to plan. Okay, next I want to talk about getting focused. When building a business, entrepreneurs have a tendency, I think, to become really distracted and scattered in both their strategy as well as their execution. So instead of functioning as the CEO, the chief executive officer, we often demote ourselves to the COE, the chief of everything. And it's because we're simply just doing too much, plain and simple. This lack of focus results in a real lack of progress, okay? And even if you're on the right track, I'm here to tell you, you're gonna get run over if you just sit there. If lack of focus doesn't completely kill your business, it's gonna cause you so much agony and pain. You know, you'll be up all those sleepless nights and those long days. I mean, it's just so not worth it. And I'm going to just tell you, the lack of focus leads to the lack of time, the lack of energy, and the lack of money. I mean, you're just in total depletion, and you can't operate at your optimum level when you are depleted. No business can survive over the long term with such important resources being unavailable. So the trick to really staying focused is to adapt my philosophy of do, ditch, and delegate. The easiest way to begin getting focused on the things that really matter in your business is to start by making a list of everything that you have to do. Just grab a piece of paper and a pen and do a brain dump. Don't stop until you feel the relief of pouring out all of the things that you are storing in your head. Don't worry at this point about any particular order of importance. Just write and release. Now, zero in on the question once you've done that. Does this make the cash register ring? With this question in mind, I'm here to tell you, going through your list, put a star or an asterisk next to the things that makes the cash register ring. You're now beginning to laser in and focusing on the things that you need to do. This becomes your to-do list. Now, you go through all the parts that have no stars or asterisks, and you ask yourself, does this have any real merit in moving my business forward? Is this a like to do or a have to do? And for all these items, put a line through it. If it's just a like to do and it doesn't have any real merit in moving your business forward, just put a line through it. This becomes your ditch list. Finally, look at all the remaining things. These should be the things that are important to your business and need to be done, but you have to ask yourself, is this really something that I have to do, or am I open to letting someone else do it? For these items, either put the name of someone you can delegate the task to, or simply write delegate next to it. And now it's time to go on the hunt through networking to find the people that have the competence to be able to assign these tasks to, hire them or barter with them to get these things done. Point of the matter is you have to focus on the things that really do make the cash register ring. Telling you, with this practice intact, you will find the energy, the time, and the clarity of conviction to lead your business to a new level of effectiveness and success. Okay, next, become a lifelong learner. Staying in the same place is the same as going nowhere these days, right? I mean, information and knowledge are nothing special today. Not like before, when they were important components that were often tied to power. I mean, Google, Yahoo, Bing, and the other search engines that are out there have made the old adage of information is power completely obsolete. Today, the operative word is competence. Competence is what takes information and knowledge to a whole new level. I mean, it's one thing to have information and knowledge sitting comfortably in your brain. It's another thing to be competent, because competence implies that you have the ability, the proficiency, and the accomplishments of having done something successfully. If you want to be outstanding in business or in life, you need to become a lifelong learner. There is a quote that I love that I think defines why it's important to adopt a lifelong learner attitude. It's by Louis L'Amour. He's a great writer of really old West stories. And he said, there will come a time when you believe everything is finished, and that will be the beginning. Don't you love that? There will come a time when you believe everything is finished, and that will be the beginning. And I love that saying, because I think it's so true. About the time you've mastered something, things have shifted. Technology has shifted. The economy has shifted. Your customers' expectations have shifted. And at some level, you will find yourself at the very beginning. So here's the best recipe I know for adopting a lifelong learner commitment. First, read. Read something new every single day. You don't have to read an hour. I mean, it can be 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, but just commit to reading something new every single day. Treat each day as an opportunity to learn something new. If not a book, read an article. If not an article, read a blog. If not a blog, listen to a podcast or some other download. Do a search on a problem area in your business or in your life on the internet. Subscribe to magazines like Fast Company, Entrepreneur Magazine, Fortune, or Forbes. Shoot for 30 minutes and be satisfied with 10, okay? Talk about, you know, what you read with other people, maybe your team, colleagues, your network associates. Engage in how to actually implement what you've learned. Otherwise, it becomes shelf help versus real self-help. Okay, it's all about action and implementation. The other things that come to mind to me around adopting a philosophy of being a lifelong learner is to attend seminars, workshops, and conferences. You know, don't forget networking events too. I mean, at eWomen Network, our speakers only speak 20 minutes, but the average TED Talk is only 10. I mean, there is plenty to learn in a very short, condensed period of time. And remember, it only takes one thing to change everything. I see lifelong learner as a competence. Be proud that you give yourself permission and schedule time to learn, to stay up on the latest trends, to identify solutions to problems, and to become aware of opportunities that can transform your life and your business. I mean, none of this happens by accident. It takes deliberate focus and time, and it pays very well. Learning is the one thing you invest in that pays the best interest. Okay, finally, I want to talk about knowing your numbers, right? I mean, there is one more just really essential ingredient to becoming massively successful, and it's so often overlooked, and I want to simplify it. I think I've done that here, and I want to share with you kind of how I look at it, kind of my philosophy, and then I want to give you a couple of core numbers to look at. Because I think having a complete understanding of the numbers is ultimately what will drive your business, either up or down, so you choose. Okay, sometimes I think we're so focused on the product and service we are providing that we forget to take a look at what the numbers are actually revealing about our efforts. Try looking at your financials as your best friend. Don't roll your eyes, hang in there with me. I mean, this is a really powerful metaphor. It's the way I look at it. It's totally changed my relationship with my numbers, okay? Look at your financials as your best friend. You may not like what they say, but here's what I can tell you. They're always going to tell you the truth. They won't just complain. They'll make sure that you know when it's time to celebrate your successes too. They won't just tell you what you're doing wrong. They'll often signal what you should be doing different. Like, for example, let's say that sales are slower this month than perhaps normal. Well, often your numbers will tell you and signal to you that maybe this is time that you should be looking at several outstanding receivables and channeling maybe some collection efforts that will help you maintain your cash flow. You see what I'm saying? Your financials are a relationship that you will have forever. They will never leave you. They are fully committed to you, and if you value them, they will actually help you manage yourself to unbelievable levels of success. There are multitude of numbers to monitor in business. And I will tell you that I want to give you some of my favorites, especially for those of you first learning to pay attention to your numbers, because you will see how each piece of the ones that I'm going to share with you will give you a unique perspective on your business. So let me talk about number one, revenues. You have to know your sales on a monthly, quarterly, and year-to-year basis. It's important for you to be able to compare these to your projections, your forecasting, the numbers that you say you want to achieve in order to see if you're behind or you're ahead of plan. And one of the things that I like to do is to compare these numbers to the same month the previous year to see if you can identify trends and to measure on your typically highest revenue producing month, let's say last year, in the same month this year, you're not just matching it, but you're surpassing it and you're measuring your growth. Number two, gross profit. Gross profit is the revenues that you earned less direct costs. Direct costs are also known as cost of goods sold. When you see cost of goods sold, that's just your direct costs of producing or developing your product or service. As a rule of thumb in service industries, ideally, you should have 50% or more of your sales revenue remaining after you subtract your direct costs. Okay, and a lot of people in service industries don't understand that, and that's a really good rule of thumb. Number three, G&A, general and administrative costs, often known and referred to as G&A. These are operating expenses versus, let's say, expenses directly related to the production of a product or service. So G&A expenses are expenses like rent, insurance, utilities, and salaries. You generally have more control over G&A, general and administrative expenses, so watch them really closely and be prepared to adjust them if you need to, right? Both up and down. Number four, profit margin. Subtract the total of your general and administrative expenses, your G&A, from your gross profit. Then divide that by your number of sales. Okay, this is a very important number because it actually tells you how profitable the business is as a percentage of sales. Very important. I'm going to repeat that because it's really important that we learn to measure profit margin. All right, because this will totally change your business once you understand this. Subtract the total of your G&A, your general and administrative expenses, from your gross profit, then divide the number by your sales. This, again, really, really important number because it will tell you how profitable your business is as a percentage of sales. If the number is negative, you are losing money. And your attention is needed immediately in order to make mid-course corrections. See if you can find out the industry standard for your business. It's often found online quite easily if you just do a search to ensure that your number is as good, if not better, than others in your industry. A lot of flexibility here, so you can do a search on that. All right, number five, compensation. This one speaks for itself, right? I mean, it's always worth seeing if there is an industry standard here too. But as a way of managing expenses, it sometimes makes better business sense to give bonuses versus salary increases. Do you see this difference? I mean, salary increases are permanent year over year. But if you give bonuses, it's a one-time, so it rewards for some good efforts. But it isn't embedded guaranteed, so it keeps you and perhaps your employees on their toes. And the reality being what it is, this is an area where, as an entrepreneur, you have to be willing to perhaps take a reduction if sales are down. or if there's an economic downturn. But conversely, it goes the other way too, right? But it's important to monitor compensation. Number six, marketing expenses. Marketing expenses don't just include advertising anymore. This also includes digital expenses included in online campaign development and social media campaigns. You should be able to adjust these regularly, especially if your marketing strategies aren't yielding your results. By that, I mean increased sales, okay? And then number seven, the last one that I'm going to talk about that is juicy, I think, is working capital. Working capital is an important term to understand and to begin to think about as it relates to your business. Working capital is the cash available for day-to-day operations in your company. I mean, technically, it's defined as the difference between current assets and current liabilities. So what does that mean? It means that you take the value of all your debts or obligations for the current year, right, and you subtract that from the value of all your cash and your assets for the same period of time. That is an important number to know because working capital is often used to measure a company's financial health. It tells you and the bank and your lenders or your investors what you have to invest in other resources needed to grow your business. Okay, so understanding these seven, revenues, gross profit, G&A, general and administrative expenses, profit margin, compensation, marketing expenses, working capital, very important terms to learn and to understand and to begin to have a relationship with, right? And all of the other accounting reports and that kind of thing, whether it be your general ledger, your income statement, your balance sheet, all of those things you need to learn as well, and easy to learn because you can hire a bookkeeper or an accountant to teach you those things. But these are the terms within all of that that I think are the magic bullets for really understanding how to manage a business. Without question, entrepreneurs who know their numbers have a distinct advantage over those who don't. Remember, your financials are like your best friend. I can't say that enough. Have a relationship with your financials and look at them as your best friend. They know the real you and your company's real story. They will guide you to put your time and energy into profit-producing activities. They will remind you to reduce or even eliminate those areas that are draining your cash flow or diverting valuable resources that would be better used elsewhere. Embracing this dear friend, I believe, is a critical component to your long-term success. So there you have it, six different strategies that I've learned to master from the super successful. They are, again, number one, self-care, number two, networking, number three, plans, number four, getting focused, number five, becoming a lifelong learner, and number six, know your numbers.
Would you like to have the opportunity to be personally coached by Sandra Yancey or participate in her accelerated coaching program called SOAR? Go to sandrayancey.com to learn more.